Okay, so it's supposed to be an introduction to SLE. So I will first describe what kind of object we are describing. What property we expect for these objects. Then I will describe relation between shapes and formal map. Then the SLE is the definition, the basics. And then the relation between statistical physics, statistical mechanics, conformal field theory, and SLE. Thank you. Oops. So first, what object? So what SLE describes are random curves or interfaces in classical mechanics. For example, if you think about the Ising model in a two-dimensional, in 2D, at criticality, so you may imagine that you define the Ising model in some domain, D. So D is a domain, which, so it's a planar domain in a two-dimension, with the topology of a disk, say. So you choose two points on the boundary, A and B, and you impose boundary condition, let's say plus on this side, and minus here. And for any realization, there will be an interface going from A to B, inside the domain, with a minus on this side, on the plus. Yeah. So what SLE will describe is to describe this curve in the scaling limit at criticality. That's one example. Another example is with percolation, critical percolation. So for instance, to define critical percolation, you can consider an hexagonal lattice. So with and to be at criticality with probability 1/2, you choose a hexagon either red or black or white. With probability 1/2 and white with probability 1/2. Then you are just at criticality. So again, what you want to describe are some interfaces between clusters. Here it was a spin cluster in the Ising model. So you, to be sure that we have an interface, you consider the domain, let's say the upper half plane, and you fix boundary condition to be sure that there is an interface for each realization of the right sample. So, for instance, you pick a point A at 0 on the real axis, and you impose that all the hexagons on the left of the origin are red and all the ones on the right are black, white, then there will be an interface to the depending on the color of the first hexagon. This one, that will be in interface. Which is, will be here, between the two, so here. With the red on the red hexagon on the left of the interface, on the white on the right. Then this interface can will move, will go in the upper half plane. you can go back up to, it's a simple curve on the lattice, but you can go back up to a few lattice size on the back on the real axis, and with the scaling limit, this point would be identified, so it would be the scaling limit correspond to a curve which go back to the real axis, and also it can go back to itself up to some lattice size, which on the scaling limit would be identified. So then we will have a curve with double points, so it's not a simple curve. It's a curve which has many double points, but there is always, so you define a full domain which is made of clusters which are either, this one are red, this one, it's a set of clusters. But there is always the tip of the curve which emerges from the set of, from the hull, which is this set of clusters which have been swallowed by, which have been surrounded by the curve. And so with the curve which is driving the process which that you will define. So what SLE will describe is this curve and also the full set of clusters which are surrounded by the curve. So the way SLE will describe this, the curve is via a gross, what, yeah? It's via a gross process. So which correspond to explore the curve step by step, so either in the Ising model or in percolation. Well, the simplest way is to understand the gross process is to look again at percolation. So we are again on the upper plane with the hexagonal lattice. And all the hexagon here, I didn't draw an hexagonal lattice, I draw a triangular lattice. I have to draw it again. The dual lattice is a triangular lattice, so yeah. And the curve is on the dual lattice. So that's the power of plane. So all the hexagon here are red, and this one are black. So then you define the hexagonal lattice by saying that so the curve emerges from the from here, let's say, curve which emerges. And then after the first step, you hit a vertex where there is an hexagon, and you have to decide the color of the hexagon. So either it's black, it's red or white with probability 1/2, let's say it's red. Then the curve will make one step here. And then you have to decide what the color of this hexagon with probability 1/2, it's either black or red, white or red, and it's red. So you make another step, you decide what it is. It's white and so on. So you have to go. So after each step, you have to decide what the color. You hit an hexagon, you have to decide the color, and you go on just following the interface. So it's how you will explore the curve just step by step. For percolation, the rules are purely local because you just have to choose the color of that hexagon. For the other model, like an Ising model, the rules are not local because there is interaction between the spins. So, so conclusion that SLE exploration or a gross process. So it's why SLE will describe this curve and the measure for this curve. Via a stochastic gross process, which will be random, so it will be a stochastic equation. Also, at the beginning, what we are describing as static object, we are just dealing with statistical mechanics. So, as I said, these curves are sample dependent. They are for each sample, they change. And there is a probability measure which is induced by the Boltzmann weight. So, these are random curve with a probability measure. So, I will describe now what the measure of this curve from statistical mechanics and what property we expect for this measure. So the measure is just induced by the Boltzmann weight. So again, if you imagine that you have a domain D with two kind of boundary conditions A and between A and B, you have a some lattice model like the Ising model. So you have an energy which will be minus G, G sigma G if you think about the Ising model. So you have some Boltzmann weight on the WC for each configuration. And I call big C the set of configuration. So then you have the partition function is just the sum over the Boltzmann weight. It depends on the domain. WC. And if you impose that so for each realization, there will be an interface, which again, which will be on the at least simple curve. Yeah. Then go up to the final point. So you can look for the probability to have that this interface follow some path, say of length large t. So I will call gamma t. So you condition on the configuration only on portion of the interface. Okay. So you can look for the probability that the interface follows that path and then do something else afterwards, but you don't care. So you just look for the first few steps of the interface. And then the probability of, by the rule of statistical mechanics, the probability to find having gamma t is just the ratio of two partition functions. T over where this partition function is simply the sum over all of the Boltzmann weight over all configuration which correspond to this interface. That's just the rule of physical mechanics. Okay, it's the sum. Well, C is the set. Well, these are the subset of configuration for which you have this interface, meaning that if you are in the Ising model, you have here you have plus and all the spin along the interface and minus here. And then everywhere you can have whatever you want. So so that's the basic definition. And what we like to describe is the behavior is a is this probability in the scaling limit at criticality when you take the continuum limit. Of course, it's impossible to control this ratio of partition function because this divergence is everywhere. But so the way SAD will do it is just by looking at what kind of property you expect for this probability and then impose directly the this property, this condition on the measure for the continuum limit, and this will specify completely the measure. So the basic property is what is called the domain Markov property. So you look for you look for the measure for the curve from B to A. And so you look for the curve from A to B, and you can condition on portion of the curve, let's say gamma T. So this means that you can look at the probability P for the curve, condition on gamma T. Probability in D. It means that I impose the first part of the curve, let's say on the length T, and then I look for the probability that the rest of the curve will follow some path. Then, when you have this data, you can look also at the distribution of the curve for the statistical model in the domain where you have cut along gamma T. So So you look at the rest of the curve. So if here, if I had boundary condition, let's say plus here and minus here, because this is an interface, I have also boundary condition plus along the curve here and minus here. So here there is a change of boundary condition. So in the domain, where you have cut the domain along the this portion of the curve, you also have an interface which starts here, and you can look at the distribution of the curve in that domain. So what you have from basic rule of statistical mechanics is that this condition, these two probabilities are equal, the condition one and the one in the cut domain. And this simply follows from this rule that if you look at this condition probability, this is the ratio. So let's say that you look at you have gamma tilde here, the probability that you have gamma tilde. This is the probability of having the curve in D of the two curves of gamma t and then gamma tilde divided by the probability of having gamma t, because this is the condition probability. So this one is just the partition function in D corresponding to the full curve. So we sum over all configuration which produce this interface, gamma t and then gamma tilde, divided by ZT. And this one is the partition function Z gamma t divided by ZD, so it's Z. So these probabilities cancel. And this probability is simply the ratio of the two partition functions, the one where you sum over all configuration producing this full interface divided by the one where you sum over all configuration which produce only the portion of the interface on which you condition. Now if you look at this probability, this is by definition ZD minus gamma T for the rest of the curve divided by partition ZD minus gamma T. But what we have when we look at the Ising model here, for instance, we have all the set of configuration, all the configuration corresponding to the spin here. And the only difference between the configuration which produces the interface is that you have cut all the bond here. So what you have is that ZD minus gamma is a partition function in the cut domain is proportional to the partition function in the full domain where you have condition on the gamma T. And the only factor which is here is the energy along the cut, which corresponds to the bond that you have cut in gamma in the cut domain. Okay. So you have the same thing also for here. So for having the curve, it's just the energy times this. Huh? So when you take this ratio, this proportional coefficient cancel, and you get the equality between the two. So for any statistical model of the Ising type, you get this property which says that if you condition on the portion of the curve, this is something as looking as the curve in the cut domain. So that's the property that has been imposed to define SLE in the continuum. So then plus, so this is property which is true even if you are not at criticality, even if you have non-homogeneous bounds interaction, so it's true everywhere. So the data, the supplementary input that you impose in to define SLE, that you will impose some proformal properties, which together with the Markov property will specify completely the measure. So the way the measure is defined in SLE is not by looking directly at the curve, but by cutting the curve into a conformal map, and then the measure is defined on the conformal map. So the measure is indirectly defined on the curve via the measure that you define on conformal map, which code for the curve. So I need to describe how you can code a curve or some domain in some conformal map. So this is based on the Riemann theorem. So, but I will start first by few examples. So this one is you just consider the map. Which behave at infinity like z. Okay. So if you look in the complex plane, so that you are in a complex plane with this real axis, at the upper half plane, there is a cut here for that map from the origin to IA. And if you take a point Z on the upper half plane by the map, this map to the upper half plane, to the point here ici. And if you are on the real axis here, from here to the origin, this is map somewhere here. So this part is map here. And the origin, if you come from the left, is mapped to minus A. Okay? Because that's when you choose the behavior to be Z at infinity, choose the way you define the sign of the square root. Now if you move along the cut here, you go from minus A, you are still on the real axis, and you go from minus A to the origin. And then if you go down, you go from A, from the origin to A. And then if you continue, you go to the real axis. So what you have done is that you have sent all the complementary part of the upper half plane complementary to this tiny slit. You have mapped it to the upper half plane. So that minus the slit is mapped to the upper half plane. And you have mapped the real axis on the slit to the real axis, so it means that you open the slit and you scratch it on the real axis. And you can reconstruct, if you give a G of Z, you can reconstruct it just by looking, you can reconstruct the slit by looking at the cut of G of Z. So that's one example of a vertical curve which is parameterized by a conformal map. Another example is you look at the map G of Z, G plus R squared over Z. So if you look what happened to the point on the upper half plane, that look again a point Z will be mapped some point on the upper half plane. And now the shape that you describe is a semicircle at the origin here. That's minus R. And if you move along that contour from the real axis, then along the semicircle and then along the real axis again, you will move on the image of this line is a real line. And this part of the semicircle is mapped into minus 2R and plus 2R. And again, the complementary part of the upper frame minus the half disk is mapped to the full upper frame. So, so indirectly, you have coded the shape, this shape, the semi-disk, into the conformal map. So now what you have coded is not simply a line, but it's a full line. So this is actually two examples of what you. Of the Riemann theorem. Which says that any, more or less, any planar domain of the topology of the disk. Is conformally to the disk or to the upper half plane if you want. They are all conformally equivalent to the disk. Yeah, any of these planar domains are conformally equivalent. You can pick any of these two domains, there will be a conformality between the two. So it means if you take any domain D, there is a map, so we could phi, which map it to the unit disk. The unit disk D delta is a set of less than one. And this is also conformally equivalent to the upper half plane. On that map, there is something like if you have a coordinate Z here and W here, you have W, the map is W is I Z minus Y minus Z 1 plus Z. That's the origin, that's the point 1, that's the point minus 1. So the point 1, the origin is mapped to I. Minus 1 is mapped to infinity, 1 is mapped to the origin, and minus 1 to infinity, which is a point on the boundary of the upper half plane. So it means that any, by this theorem, any shape is coded into a conformal map, because you can choose either the unit disk or the upper half plane as a reference domain, and then you will compare the, any domain to the upper half plane, say. And then when you want to compare, you just you code it into the conformal map. Yeah?
Very stupid question. With this semicircle,
yeah.
This curve is if it's singular r minus r, you can get a slope. Whereas on this g of z is very regular at this point.
Yeah.
Looks strange for me, but how it happened then?
But it's yeah, also you have a
no, here at the top, square root is singular.
Yeah.
You have branch cut at IA, and that you see both at the curve and on the line. But with the example below, where the semicircle,
there is no square root.
Here, Z is regular at both two points, but the curve is a bit of singular.
But if you look at the inverse map, that will be square root. So you will not be surprised. No?
So you say if I will make inverse, then I will get square root, and then see I will see something.
So that's by this one that we can code in shape in some domain. So if you really want the conformal map to be intersect to the domain, we have to specify it uniquely. And there is always a three-parameter group which leave invariant some domain. So in the upper half plane, the three-parameter group is SL2R, which corresponds to the homographic transformation. Okay, go to D. That's for the upper half plane. And then the image of this map by the uniformizing map give you a group for any domain. So to completely fix this map, we have to impose three conditions. Now, once we have imposed three conditions, real conditions, and the map is unique, and so it's completely intrinsic to the domain, so any statement you can make about the map, once it's unique, is a statement about the domain. Since we are, I will give another example which is very simple and which will be useful to see how conformal map evolve when a domain varies or when the domain is growing. So imagine that we look at a tiny domain in the graph plane. So just a little bit, you depose a little bit of matter in the line, the real line. So this, there is a h function, which is epsilon h of x, you have to print x. Epsilon is very small. So that you can map the complementary part of the domain into the graph plane, some map G. So this map, these maps are called uniformizing map. And in this case, in first order in epsilon, this map is just Z plus epsilon plus some measure, d mu of x, z minus x, some other. With d mu of x, is just a constant, which I forget, times h plus dx. So you can see just by, you may approximate this slightly wavy domain by the theory of semicircle, and you will get this formula. Or you just look at which are the value of z for which this function, the image is mapped to the real axis, and you will find the shape of the domain. Okay. So to first order, it's just this Cauchy integral. So once you know that, then you can look for evolution of conformal map when a domain is growing. So that's called Lovner chain. Imagine that we have some domain here. So that's D, some time T. And that we can map into the graph by some map H of G of T. And then the domain is growing, so there is a shape change a little bit. So delta C. So this part is not uniformized by G of T. It's mapped somewhere else here. But then you can find a map, which you can call G T delta T, which uniformizes it into uniformize H minus into the upper half plane. So this is of the form delta t times some h of t, maybe of x. So the map g of t delta t of z has this form, where with epsilon is proportional to delta t, so it's z plus delta t integral over some measure d mu t of x, z minus x, plus rho of delta square, with a measure is proportional to the matter you have added, not exactly on the physical space, but on the image space, by the uniformizing map. So that's the part of the matter you have added. And now the map g, so you wonder what the map g of plus delta t, which code for the domain d plus delta t. So this map is simply the composition of the two, because you can go from here. That will be g of t plus delta t. So this is equal to, you first have to use gt, and then g of t plus delta t. So you just compose the two maps. Okay? So if you insert this composition in this expression, you get that gt plus delta t of z is equal to gt of z plus delta t d mu t of x. Again, d mu t is correspond to the amount of matter you have added, times gt of z minus x plus. So this means that the way to describe the evolution of the domain is just the evolution of the conformal map on the differential equation, which is gt of z is z mu t of x gt of z minus x. So that's one example of the Lovner chain. And so the growth of the domain is specified by this measure, which again code by from what you have added, which code the piece you added at each time.
We made some choice here for how
I was going to say. I made some choice actually. In all the map I have described, they behave like at infinity. Gt is z. Okay, so this means that g infinity is infinity, so you fix a point on the border. This is one real condition. There is no coefficient here, so g prime of at infinity is 1. This is not yet enough to fix it, but so when you do the expansion now, there will be an expansion of over 1 over z. So there could be a constant coefficient here plus O of 1 over z. And in all the map I have chosen for polynomial this one, the constant is not there. Okay? That's the third condition. This means that g minus z is equal to O 1 over z. And this is called the hydrodynamic normalization. So if you have this normalization, it's preserved by this equation because this map, the way I choose it, preserve it. So the map is unique, and this is a unique way of describing the evolution of the domain. So this is one way, for example, to describe evolution of Laplacian growth, which corresponds to EL. So now, what happened for curves? Imagine that we say that the growth is purely local. When you have a curve, you have always a tip of which is emerging. So the matter you add at each time is purely localized at one point. Huh? It's just a tiny slit, like I was describing before. So for curves, the measure d mu t of x is localized at some coefficient, positive coefficient x minus u t, which correspond to the image of the tip of the curve. So that correspond to the actual domain, the tip of the curve is tiny bit, is not somewhere here at the point u of t. So in that case, the equation is t of gt is a t over gt of z minus u. So now, by a change of reparametrization, the time t, I didn't specify the time t, you can choose a t to be 2. So I make a choice. Okay. And that's a Lovner equation. What it describes, so it describes the uniformizing max. If you have a curve, gamma t, so it's mapped. We have a curve in the upper half plane. You look at the upper half plane minus the curve, it's mapped into the upper half plane. So the tip here of the curve, gamma t, is mapped to gt. Ut is the image of the tip of the curve by the map gt from the construction we have here. So the normalization again is gt is z plus nothing plus 0 plus, if you look at this equation, you have 2t of z plus.
Why did you choose 2 numerals?
Just historical. Now, the fact that you choose a constant that because then this term, the coefficient which is here is called the capacity index 9440, and things become simpler in SLE when you choose to parameterize the curve with this. No, just historical. Not my fault. Schramm choose to. Okay, so now we can inverse the logic and start from we can inverse the logic. Instead of starting from the curve constructing the conformal map, we can start from the differential equation. So we start from the data which are u of t, and then we will construct the curve. So we start with the function t u of t, and then we integrate the equation. So from that, by integration, we get dt of z. So the initial condition is that at time t there is no curve. So dt at time 0 is the identity because there is no curve. And then it's the first order differential equation, we can integrate it up to some times at least when this is non-zero. Then once we have integrated the equation, then we reconstruct the curve. Yeah, gamma of t is the inverse image of u of t. Okay, to be more precise, it should be the limit when tn goes to 0 plus t minus 1 of t qt plus ui epsilon. Because g of t is defined on the upper half, the inverse of g of t is defined on the upper half plane, it doesn't include the real axis. Okay. So it means that this function is a way to completely parameterize the curve. So the curve is a one-dimensional object, if you think about it at up to a parametrization. So it's norm. It's quite clear that you can parameterize into one-dimensional, into one function. So u of t is a parameter. The function u of t is a parametrization of the curve. So for example, if you take u of t a constant, you will get as a curve just something which grows vertically. If you take u of t a square root, you get a straight line which with some angle with respect to the real axis. And so okay. So we can make a break now before I now we have the tool to define what SLE are. So again, what we want to describe is a set of curves in a domain, and we think about curve going from one point on the boundary to another one, A and B. So we want what will correspond to what is called chordal SLE. So there is a variant of SLE which describe a curve going from the boundary to the to some point in the bulk and so on. But I will stick to chordal SLE. So we want the measure for the curve gamma from A to B. But this measure will depend on D, depend on A, depend on B. And we will impose a few properties. So the first property that we have seen from classical mechanics is the domain Markov property. So one is that's not enough to fully specify the measure, and then because we are at criticality in two dimensions, we impose some conformal invariance, but actually I will call, name it conformal transport. And the two together completely specify the measure, and the measure will be induced by a one-dimensional Brownian motion, and that's quite remarkable. So what conformal transport means is that you, if you have two domains, D, hat, on a conformal map between the two, phi. So in the domain here, you want to map to describe curve from A to B. And here you want to describe the curve from A hat to B hat. So you choose a conformal map which map phi, such that the image of B is B hat, the image of A is A hat. A conformal transport, it means that if you know the probability measure for the curve in this domain, you just transport it by the map into the other domain. Okay? So if you know the measure in one domain, just by transporting, you will know in any domain. So you transport the measure.
In particular, if B hat is equal to B, does that measure
to be invariant? Yeah, exactly. So that is, with this data, I have I specify only two conditions. Okay, so I have one condition left. So this means that the measure will be has to be invariant under some one parameter group, which in the upper half plane is just a dilatation, if you fix 0 and infinity. Okay, so this statement is more or less empty as it is, because it just tells you that if you know the measure somewhere, you know how to define it everywhere. So it's like if you know the function, if you know, that's called, like the rule for transporting a vector field. If you know the vector field in some domain, then you know how to transport it in any domain. It's not empty if you know that this measure are coming from lattice model, because you define the lattice model in the first domain, then in the second domain. Then you take the scaling limit, so you look at the lattice model in the first domain, you take the scaling limit, you have a measure, you transport it, and you may compare it with the scaling limit of the measure in the second domain. Then you have two things to compare, and that's a non-empty statement, and that will be the statement of conformal invariance. But if you are only working directly in the continuum, as mathematicians are doing to define SLE, you have nothing to compare with when you have transported, so it's an empty statement. Not enough to specify the measure. So it's why you need the Markov, domain Markov property. So again, that's property number two, and property number one is the domain Markov. So it says that if you look at the curve in the domain from D from A to B, you condition portion of the curve, gamma t, and you look for the distribution of the rest. So you should have that the probability from D from A to B, condition gamma t, is the same thing as probability measure in the cut domain. Starting from C, which is the image of the tip of the curve, so you condition this portion of the curve, we call it gamma. From C goes to B. That was Markov. So we impose this condition because we know that if we think about the curve from statistical mechanics, it has to be there. Huh? It was true on the lattice for even if you are not at criticality. Now, when you So if you had only these conditions, that will not be enough to construct the measure, because we have seen that it's true even when you are not at criticality. It's only when you meet the two that you get enough constraints to completely specify the measure. Because if you mix the two, then the domain D minus gamma, where you have cut along gamma, is conformally equivalent to D. So there is a map
which I can call h of gamma, which some b to b, c to a, and d to d. I imagine that here I have the map h of gamma is such that h of b is b, h of gamma c is a. H of gamma is from d minus gamma to d. So if I think about the lattice model, I have my boundary conditions, which are, let's say, red on this side, so it's here also. So what the map is doing is that it's sending all these red parts here, the white part, this part here, on the left of the curve is mapped. So now, by this map, the rest of the curve is not here. And we see that we have reproduced exactly the initial configuration with the boundary condition from A to C with this map. So this map has simply erased the portion of the curve on which we condition. But some by conformal transport, this will be linked to the probability G. So we have to, in D, from A to B of the h of gamma of that. Okay? So this means that the image of this portion of the curve here, so is an image here. So if you were gamma tilde here, you will have h of gamma, gamma tilde. So this image of the portion of the curve has the same law. As the initial curve. Okay. Now we have mixed the two. We have a condition of the probability on the same domain with the same data. So we have a condition of the probability. And that will be enough to fully specify the measure. And that's what is called conformal invariance now. So to make it explicit, we use the parametrization of the curve in terms of conformal map, and we use Lovener equation. So since we have conformal, we have imposed a conformal transport, it's enough to look at the measure in some domain. We choose the upper half plane. So we have our curve, gamma up, up to time t, and then continue, up to t, in h. There is a conformal map gt. With the normalization, so gt of z is normalized by z plus 2t of z plus n, and it satisfies the equation dt of gt of z is 2 gt of z minus u of t. And the map u of t is the image by zt of this point here. So this is u of t. Now we have to be able to impose this conformal invariance property, we have to find the map which sends the tip of the curve back to the starting point, so we have to find the map, the analog of h. And here, h of t is simply gt minus ut, because then you map, so that was ut. By h of t, so if I use h of t, I send the tip of the curve back to the origin, okay? Just by translation. And then you have the rest of the curve. So now I want to impose this condition, so I will look at the curve and I condition on portion of the curve, let's say on gamma t. So I want to look at the full distribution of the curve. So when I can erase, absorb the portion of the curve gamma t by this map h of t, and then I have the image here which is gamma tilde, which is the image of T on S, which is the image H of T of gamma of T plus S. On that, I can uniformize it with some conformal map into the paragraph plane, and then which sends the tip of the curve back to the origin. Yeah. And I can also uniformize it completely directly, this map, by the map H of T plus S, which sends this tip of the curve to the origin by definition. So the map which is here is simply H T plus S composed with H T inverse. Okay, I go H T. And what the Markov property tell us, the Markov, the conformal invariance property, tell us that the image of the rest of the curve should be distributed in the same way as the original curve. So this means that the law of this curve should be the same law as the original curve. So because the parameter T is here, it should be the same as the law of the curve of, as gamma S. So this should be equivalent in law to gamma S. That's the conformal invariance property. It's why we choose the parametrization with S, because it's an intrinsic object to the curve. So this means that in law, this should be the same thing as HS. Okay. So that's statement of conformal invariance. So that's the conformal invariance of SLB. So this is this Markov property. Now, when you expand at large Z, this implies that by looking at that U of T plus S minus U S T is in law same thing as U S. It means that the U has identical on that on the this, I have this increment should be independent of this means that the increment should be distributed identically and are independent because the rest of the curve is independent. It has identical increment. Now, if we impose that that the U of T is continuous, because you don't want any branching. If U of T is not continuous, then the curve will branch. So, if we impose continuity, this implies that U of T has to be proportional to a Brownian motion. So there is a parameter with that B of T is a Brownian motion when the Brownian motion, which means that it's a Gaussian process with a covariance, the minimum of T and S. Plus, there could be a drift term, which is alpha of T. Now, if you require that you want to preserve that the measure is invariant under the map which preserves the data which are the upper half plane, the point zero and the point infinity, this map is a dilatation. This imposes that there should be no drift term if you want to preserve to have the global invariance by dilatation. So U of T should be Brownian motion. There is only one free parameter, which is kappa. So in summary, what we got is that SLE is simply defined via the Lovner equation.
Is U
of T is kappa B of T. So that's the definition of SLE. And so what we have during this procedure, what we have seen is that Brownian motion is the fact that you have Brownian motion. The fact that you have a Brownian motion is just an echo of conformal invariance. So that's SLE kappa. Kappa is positive. There is only one parameter. It means that okay. And then the curve as is defined indirectly via this construction, via the curve is reconstructed via the conformal map, by the formula that it's inverse image by the map GT of the Brownian motion. So the measure that you the Brownian motion is equipped with a measure which induces a measure on the conformal map, and then induces a measure on the curve. And this curve has this measure on the curve has a conformal invariance property in the sense of Schramm, which is okay, so if you just want to define SLEs, it can be done in 3 lines, 2 minutes, and you don't need all the previous argument I gave. So just before going to the establishing the connection between SLE and statistical mechanics, I describe a few basic properties of SLEs. So I repeat that the curve is defined here. I think it's inverse image of the Brownian motion. So that was a difficult theorem, I think, to prove. It was proved by Rode and Schramm. Schramm, the fact that it's a curve. Because it was known in the past that when you have a linear equation, if u is regular enough, namely if it's older 1/2 plus epsilon, then the gamma of t that you reconstruct that way is a curve. But just the Brownian motion is just at the border of this limit, just older 1/2. So it was not obvious that it was a curve. Then you can see that if kappa is zero, so there is no Brownian motion, I describe just a slit. And then when kappa increases, the curve U of T starts to move, and then the curve starts to zigzag inside the upper half plane. That will imply that there is different phases depending on the value of kappa. Namely, if kappa is less than 4, you have a simple curve, describe simple curve. If kappa is between 4 and 8, excluded, you describe there's many double points. So there is an infinite number of so that's what happened per collation. So there is never, there is no crossing. So there is only double point. So the curve is oriented. So here, for example, it goes from here to here. So there is no crossing. It's just a curve touch itself. And there is always a tip of the curve emerging from the domain, which is called the L. So that's called the L. And it happens an infinite number of times because it happens at any scale. This touching mechanism. And then if kappa is bigger than 8, it's space filling. Okay. Then one formula, for example, if you this curve are fractal curve, and if you look at the fractal dimension of the curve, is 1 plus cap over 8 for cap less than 8, and 2 above because it's a space filling. So that was a conjecture long ago by conformal field theory, by Duplantier probably. And it was proved by Vincent Defarra using SLE. By the in terms of the central charge and in terms of the but the kappa is related to the coupling constant in the Coulomb gas, so actually it was in terms of the Coulomb gas parameter. Okay, so I will not do more concerning SLE, but now I just want to describe the connection between conformal field theory, so statistical mechanics at criticality in two dimensions, and SLE. Because we started from statistical mechanics, we have seen the properties that we want to impose on the curve, and then SLE just starts from that property and defines the object directly on the continuum, but we lose any contact with the statistical mechanics in that construction. So in particular, in the construction, we have seen there is only one parameter, which is kappa. So this parameter should be linked to the parameters which appears in the statistical model, which describes the universality class of the model, of the critical model. So there will be a relation between kappa and charge of the conformal field theory. So again, the way to make contact is follow from basic property of statistical mechanics in the same way as the Markov property come from basic property of statistical mechanics. And this property is what we call a statistical mechanics martingale. Means that using statistical mechanics, you can rearrange when you do a statistical sum. So you can choose the way you do the sum, and you can do the sum in such a way that you can view the statistical mechanics. You can introduce gross processes into any statistical models, and then correlation function will become a martingale for these gross processes. So we'll do only for interfaces, but you can do the same kind of construction. With different contexts. So the basic idea for this construction is just to rearrange statistical sum.
So are you saying that there's other examples we know where we're doing this?
More or less, randomization group is the same thing. So, we start again with the domain D, with the bound 2. That's two kind of boundary condition. And there is a curve. So I recall I defined the Boltzmann weight WC, and then the partition function ZT was the sum of the Boltzmann weight. Now if you have some observable O, which is simply a map from to any configuration, you associate a number, you look at the correlation function, statistical average of this observable in the domain D, is simply the sum of the observable, the whole configuration of the observable weighted by the Boltzmann weight, and you have to normalize by the partition function. You can do the same thing and view um, we can do the same thing in the domain, in the cut domain, where you cut along the the interfaces. So you condition on some portion of the interface. When you look at the correlation function inside the cut domain, so again you can define the correlation function in the cut domain. It will be the sum of the observable weighted by the conformal weight, but you have to sum only about the coefficient configuration corresponding to the cut domain, which are the configuration of the initial domain, which produce these interfaces. And then you have to normalize by the partition function. So now this can be viewed as a random variable because it depends on the interface. And since it's a random variable, you can compute its mean. And you compute the mean of this variable using the measures that you have defined for the interfaces. And this measure was defined as a ratio of partition function. So the set of interfaces is equipped with the measure. P of gamma, which was Z, P of gamma divided by Z T. I put a T here, okay. T is just more or less the length of the interface. So you can average this number with this measure. That's the average with respect to the gamma t of the correlation function in the cut domain. Then what happens is that when you sum over all the interfaces, you will reproduce the full sum over the configuration. Then the partition function here. So I can write this one is the sum over all the gamma t of z in gamma t 1 over z in gamma t c w c. So the partition function cancel, so you get 1 over z t, and then when you sum over all the positions of the interfaces, these two sums will produce the full sum over all configuration, because that actually was in the partition of the configuration space. So you get the sum over all the configuration of C W C. So what does it mean? That this average with respect to the shape of the interface is simply the full the original statistical sum. So what we have done here, we simply have chosen the way to do the statistical sum. We have done, we first fix portion of the interface, we do the statistical sum, and then we sum over all possible interfaces. If you think about a path integral, we are just changing variable. We use as a variable the variable which code for the shape of the interface on the rest. So we first integrate over the rest, and then we integrate over the shape of the interface. So that's true for any length of the curve. So you can view the length of the curve as the time parameter. So you have some gross processes, stochastic gross processes, which correspond to increase the length of the interfaces. This define a processes because you equip the measure, and the measure has a good property to define your processes. So this means that this quantity are, when the length increase or when the time increase, are conserved in mean. Okay. So this means that these objects are martingale for the processes which are associated to the specified more longer and longer part of the interface. Okay. So that's true for any model. Now we will impose this relation in the context of SLE on critical system in two dimensions. So for SLE on CFT, E, the measure on the gamma T, so it's supposed to converge. That measure was defined on the lattice, well defined. When you take the continuum limit, you don't know what exactly it is, but we have found the proper proposal for it, just starting from the its supposed property. So this measure has to be the SLE measure, one of the SLE measures with some parameter kappa in the scaling limit. Now the correlation function in the domain D, but the statistical sum, they are supposed to be a ratio of CFT of conformal field theory correlation function. So that's the basic rule of conformal field theory, the ratio of conformal field theory. The operator psi I introduced AR there to code the boundary operator which code for the change of boundary condition. So the psi operator on the boundary, coding the boundary, the change of boundary condition. So the fact that you have to introduce this operator was understood by Cardy long ago. So the correlation function of the product of the of this operator is simply the analog of the partition function here. So this partition function up to infinite factor, which depends on the randomization, converge to this correlation function. And then the ratio of the two is the statistical sum. So now if you impose this condition, you get a relation. This imposes a relation between SLE and the conformal field theory. So what we have to demand is that is the domain minus gamma t are marking in. For SLE, so that means that this relation is satisfied in particular. But this implies a relation between central charge C on kappa. So the relation of the form 6 minus kappa, 6 kappa minus 8 of the 2 kappa, I think. And this will be the fact that it's a martingale is linked to the fact that the operator psi, which creates the boundary condition, psi is an operator which has a null vector, for those who know what's a conformal field theory, has a null vector at level 2. So it speaks that its dimension is what is called H12, is 6 minus kappa over 2 kappa. But a priori, whatever the operator you choose, this ratio of conformal field theory will be in martingale. So to be in martingale, it has to satisfy some boundless condition. So it's what is called local martingale. So because it has to satisfy conditions such as this mean exist. But for any for any observable O, it has to be, yeah. So the condition, the fact that it's a martingale just comes from property of the conformal field theory and of the operator psi. And the operator psi code for the boundary condition you choose. That's it. So it means that in statistical model, you have to choose given kappa, you have to choose correctly the model, so the bulk model, and you have to choose correctly the boundary condition. And technically, what happens is that in conformal field theory, when you have a new vector at level 2, means that you have a differential equation, which is a second order, on this differential equation of the second order is identified with the analog of the Fokker-Planck operator for the SLE.
So that's an analog with respect to the Virasoro symmetry?
Yeah.
That would be.
Yeah, the only Virasoro symmetry. Actually, C is less than 1 here. So that would be the analog of the Fokker. Actually, the dual of the Fokker-Planck operator. The differential equation of second order. So you get, so now you have a correspondence between SLE and conformal field theory, and you know to which conformal field theory the SLE will apply. So for example, kappa equals 3 will correspond to the Ising model, the spin cluster, and you what you describe is the boundary between the spin clusters. Kappa equal 4 corresponds to C equal 1, which is a Gaussian free field. Kappa equal 6 corresponds to percolation. C equal 0, yeah, it's percolation. Kappa equal 8/3 correspond to C equal 0 again. And this is self-avoiding work. So for any value of C, there is two values of kappa, which are related by the symmetry kappa goes to 16 over kappa. So for example, these two values are the two dual values. This one is self-dual. And the dual value of Ising model is 16 over 3, it will again correspond to the Ising model, but you describe the FK clusters. And so on. So you can find the correspondence between the ON model and SL kappa, the Klotz model and SL kappa, and so on. I think I will stop here.
So for a generic value of kappa, you get some generic value of C, and then
you know that, for example, you have the ON model that is parameter n, which varies continuously, and there is a dense phase and dilute phase. So the dilute phase will correspond to when you vary the parameter n to kappa between 2 and 4. It's a dilute phase, simple curve. And when you are in the dense phase, it corresponds to model between kappa equal 4 and 8. The same way, when you look at the Potts model, you have two high temperature expansion, you have the FK clusters. The boundary of the FK cluster will correspond to some SLE, which kappa, with kappa between 4 and 8, depending on the value of the parameter. Parameter in the Potts model, the Q set Potts model. So you don't have statistical model which correspond to kappa less than 2 and to kappa less than 8, bigger than 8.
So these are very specific conformal field theories. So is the idea that for every conformal field theory which doesn't fall into this class, there's also some description of SLE type, or what's the...
Yeah, that's obvious. Paul and his co-operator did something for corresponding to the Vesemino-Witten model. If you want to go to central charge bigger than 1, you have to add the degrees of freedom along the curve, which are related to the degree of freedom of the conformal field theory. Because as a geometrical object, the curve will be described by SLE kappa, because of the Sham argument, which says that if you have conformal invariance, then it's SLE kappa. So if you want to go to a bigger value of C, you have to add something to the geometrical object. If not, you just look at the geometrical object by itself.
Thank you.